All right, good evening, everyone. We are starting the second perek of Megillat Esther. And tonight, just to give you the broad picture first, since most of you realize by this point I'm a deductive person and not an inductive person. So let me start with the forest and then we'll look at the trees. So we're going to be looking at who exactly Mordechai is, who exactly Esther is, and because they're obviously the key players in terms of the Hatzalah, the salvation of Klal Yisrael in the Purim story. So we really need to focus on them. We're also going to be seeing a little bit of more corroborative evidence of the Prustkeit manifested by Achashverosh with his beauty contest, which is what's going to be taking place as well in the beginning. And as you all know, it's always a great challenge for me giving a woman share to say things exactly the right way. So I'm going to do my very best when we get to the beauty contest piece. Okay, because that is very challenging. All right, so let's begin. So we start with Achar HaDivarim HaEle. Okay, so let's just start with that phrase. So if you look, so Achar HaDivarim HaEle, after these things, that's on this sheet. And then we have the other sheet. So you can like hold them sort of next to each other. And you'll see the very first source on the second sheet is from Medrash Esther Rabbah. And it deals with the phrase, Achar HaDivarim HaEle. Now, like everything within the Torah world, there is a lack of unanimity of opinion about anything that is substantive. That's why, for example, when we're dealing with halacha, we need a psak. So psak comes from the Hebrew infinitive lehafsik. It means to cease. So with a psak comes the cessation of the conversation. All right. Yes, there's this view, there's that view, there's this view, there's that view. Okay, but eventually you need to know, is this chicken kasher? Was the mikveh leaking? Etc., etc. So all these different kinds of questions could have many different views, but you need a psak because you need to be able to live in this world. When it comes to the wonderful, exciting world of exegesis, of analysis of textual material, you don't have a psak. Rashi, as important as Rashi is but one view. And the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, and so forth, are other views. So too, even if we look in this first Medrash itself, we're going to see that they do not agree. We have two Chachamim who don't agree with what Achar HaDivarim HaEle actually means, after these things. So if you look inside, it says, Amar Rebbe Aibo, B'Shem Rebbe Yossi ben Zimra. So Rebbe Aibo, in the name of Rebbe Yossi ben Zimra, said, Kol makom shene'amar, in every case where it says, okay, Achar, as in Achar HaDivarim HaEle, after these things. So it's his view that it is samuch, okay, which means we have juxtaposition. And that would be physical juxtaposition, okay? And when you're dealing with psukim, it'd be like one event takes place immediately next to the other event in time. Okay, that's the idea of Achar, according to Rabbi Aibo in the name of Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra. Acharei, okay, and the only difference, of course, is what? One letter, the Yud, but Acharei means muflag, that they're not juxtaposed, that they're separated in time. So according to this first view, Achar is juxtaposition in time, Acharei is separation. That's one side of the equation. Because look at what now goes and says. V'Rabbanan, Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra, but the Rabbanan said, in the name of Yossi ben Zimra. Notice, it's the same person. Okay, first we had Rabbi Aibo in the name of Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra. Okay, and we had one Masorah, but the Rabbanan in the name of Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra had a different Masorah as to what Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra said. We don't know what he said. And it's actually going to be, as our mothers and certainly our grandmothers would have said, Pum Faker. We're going to completely turn it around. Koma kom shenemar achare. No, when it says achare, that means samuch. That means juxtaposition. Which leaves you the other one, which is achar, and that is muflag, and that means distance in time. So the real question is, when we now have our verse, achar hadivarim ha'ele, it is possible, and very legitimately so, that it could either be close in time or after a significant period of time, depending on which way you want to look at the word achar. Okay? Now, I'll tell you what my own feeling is, but it doesn't mean that you have to go that way. Because as I said before, when it comes to analysis of psukim, there's no such thing as a psak. Okay? But my own gut reaction after studying this for a significant period of time is that we are talking about juxtaposition in terms of time. So in other words, Ahasuerus, we have to remember, was a Sybarite. He was a voluptuary. He was involved in the radical pursuit of pleasure. Whatever gave him pleasure, that was Ahasuerus. So given that he's such a low-life individual, and he looked at women purely from a utilitarian perspective, okay, again, no relationship, but rather what was good for me is what's good for the world. Ahasuerus, okay, had that attitude. So it seems to me, especially the next words where it says, Kishok chamat ha-melech Ahasuerus, when the king's anger and aggravation dissipated, Zachar et Vashti. He remembered Vashti. Couldn't have been a very long time. Because after all, Vashti was his centerfold wife. Okay, she was beautiful beyond compare. He murders her. And given Ahasuerus to be very rabbinic and very proper, he's lonely. Okay? So let's take a look. Okay, we have the expression Kishok Chamat Amelech Ahasuerus. Again, if we're going from sheet to sheet, it says the following, also still in the Medrash, B'shach. Okay, when it completely dissipated, Ein Kativ Kan Elekishach. Okay, that it's rather Kishok. Excuse me, B'shach Ein Kativ Kan Elekishach. So it says Kishach. So what does chaf always mean when we're looking at a pasuk? As if. But it isn't a done deal. Okay? So for example, I think everyone in here has probably bought at least one house in their life, right? Mm-hmm. So you know that there's many, many steps. And according to some of those steps, one or the other, either the seller or the buyer can still back out. True, there'll be a financial loss, but it's not a done deal. It's as if it was done. Of course, if it's a $2.5 million house and you put down $750,000 as a binder, you're probably not backing out. Mm-hmm. But is it possible? Yeah, of course it is. So the point that the Medrash is making is this. Kashoch. So, shichacha she'ena shechicha. So it's dissipation that isn't dissipation. In other words, he is not what we would say in everyday vernacular. He is not a happy camper. He, again, to put it into terminology that will not be offensive, he's like a baby who's missing his candy. But no other way to say it. So we continue.
He doesn't care about Vashti. He just wants what she gave him.
Companionship, etc. Plus.
Well, he didn't care about companionship either.
That's true.
She was being
she and PC. I'm being extremely PC, but I think everybody understands. Okay.
Well, I thought you said it before he was lonely. No, not in that way. I got
no.
it.
No.
Got it. Okay.
But again, I was being, not like, you know, lonely, like, the, you know, Rav Soloveitchik has a sefer called The Lonely Man of Faith, where he's talking about existential loneliness. If you would have used the word, yeah. okay, like this, with, exactly.
And they're not going to put him in the same category.
Okay, and he wasn't looking for an Azer Conegdo or anything. He just wanted to make sure he had no one that was Conegdo, someone who was against him, but he wasn't looking for an Azer. All right, so next. So, Zachar et Vashti. Does everyone see? Now, here's where we are in the source sheet, okay, where we're filling all this in. Now, we're spending this time on this first Pasuk. We're not going to spend that much time on all of the psukim because it's really setting up the whole prologue to what's going to be taking place. So we need to look at it. So he says this, Zachar et Vashti. So again, still the Medrash. Gezera zot. He remembered the Gezera, the law, the edict, dare I say after today, the executive order. Okay, Shigazar, okay, that he put forth Aleha. Now, what was that? What did he want her to do? Shetikanes lefanav aruma, that she should come before him, and not just him, which wouldn't have been particularly horrendous, okay, but before a huge crowd of noblemen, aruma, unclothed. Velo niknas, and she refused. And again, not because she was, you know, Miss Beit Yaakov's Snua of the Year, but rather because it was done in the wrong way. That's one of the things we covered last week. Had the king himself asked him, and it would have been the king and I, she would have been very happy. But it wasn't that at all. What was it instead? He sent his underlings, and she was a princess. You can't do that. So she doesn't go to the party in nothing other than her crown. She doesn't go to the party at all. V'katzaf aleha v'harga, and he got very angry at her and he killed her. Okay, now at that point the Medrash says min dekatla, from the moment that he killed her, shari tehi bay, he began to think over, oops, what did I do? Okay. One of the problems about death, as we all know, is that at least at this point in history, it's irrevocable. And now he goes, oops, what did I do? And then it goes on and says, the Medrash, Lama she'asata kahogen. Why did I do that? She actually acted correctly. Now here, do you remember... Again, what?
A day late and a dollar short.
Yeah, a day late and a dollar short. Yep. You know, I once had one of my balabatim when I was a shul rav once said to me, Rabbi, we always need to be careful about words because once they leave the mouth, you can never put them back.
It's like that feather flying off the mouth.
Yeah, and I thought that was, you know, mikom olam da hiskalti. Okay, it was a good thing. And obviously, I left Rabbanus in terms of a shul Rabbanus in 87, and I must have heard that like in 86. It's a long time ago, and I still remember. So this view of Vashti, where it says, Lama she'asata kahogen, because after all, why was I so angry with her, says Achashverosh? She performed correctly. What do you mean she performed correctly? So in this medrash, Vashti was not a comrade in arms about being uncaring to be unclothed before all these people. That's one of the midrashim we saw. In this one, according to the Mephoshim, that's precisely why she didn't want to go. Okay, so the other one is, she would have gone, the other midrash is, she would have gone, but she wasn't asked properly. This one, she wouldn't go, because the whole idea was repulsive to her. Okay? Then, ve'et asher nigzar aleha, and then he remembered what he had done, and he said, you know, that really wasn't so nice. Okay? We would say probably pashnish. Okay? Shelo kahogen. I asked her something that was terrible. So now he's beginning to feel really badly. Now, you ready? This is called, in Hebrew, hasipur, Sheme'achurei ha-sipur. Or,
the story behind the story.
You ready for this? This is such an amazing medrash. If you, those of you who like to follow in the original Ivrit, it's worth looking at it. V'lama alta la kach. Why, what was the story behind the story that Ahasuerus was so upset about that he would actually, in this case, try to force her to come, okay, in her altogether to this large meeting of noblemen? You ready? And this is in bold. This is such an amazing medrash. Lefi shelo hayata manechet l'Achashverosh, because she did not give Achashverosh her imprimatur that it's okay, litain reshut, to give him, so to speak, permission, livnod beit hamikdash. According to this, Achashverosh wanted to build the beit hamikdash.
Allegedly.
Yes, detective. Allegedly. Okay? He wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. But she didn't want to build the Beit HaMikdash. Why? Because her ancestors, only two generations earlier, had destroyed the first Beit HaMikdash in 586 BCE.
Still drinking from the vessels.
Correct. And here's what she said. Ve'omeret lo. Okay, and this was, remember how insecure, remember how he's precisely in every way, shape, or form the kind of guy that long ago, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, when all of us were dating, okay, he's the kind of guy, or if were he to be a woman, the kind of woman that we would all run miles away from. So he has an ego, as I said last week, about as thick as a robin's egg shell. Okay, it's totally breakable. So when she said no to him, he felt totally put down. V'yomerelo, she said to him, Ma shehichrivu avotai, that which my ancestors destroyed, atam nevakesh livnot, do you want to build? No. Between you and me, king, I'm the real princess. And you, if you do this, it'll be the biggest possible slap in the face. So how do you think he felt? So then, according to this, let's work backwards. What did he then do as actually going forward? What did he do as a result of this?
He retaliated
by saying, you have to appear unclothed before everybody.
Or off with your head.
Okay, or off with your head, which in fact took place. But according to this, this secret story, right? Fascinating, isn't it? Fascinating. Who ever heard this before? The secret story is, she said, no, I will not tell you it's good to build a Beit HaMikdash. Don't build a Beit HaMikdash. My ancestors destroyed it. Don't you dare do that. And he felt it was the biggest put down possible.
But it does make a bit of sense, because look what she did to all the Jewish maidens, you know, on Shabbat, Dafka, be naked and be her slaves.
Correct. Well, that's what we always talk about in the world of rabbinic theology of mida keneged mida. Right? If you're nasty to someone, you know, what do they say? I don't know the original Yiddish, but what goes around comes around. It's going to, you know, come back. Right? So, for example, in the world of halacha, one of the reasons we're supposed to be so careful when it comes to tzedakah is because now, Baruch Hashem, we're in the position where we can give tzedakah. Who knows if the recipients of our tzedakah in the future, their offspring and their offspring's offspring, maybe they'll be in our position, and Chas V'Shalom, our future offspring will be in their position. Mm-hmm. So it's a midah keneged midah kind of thing. All right, let's continue now. Now we're not going to spend a lot of time on Bet Gimel Dalid, okay? Because that is the beauty contest. Okay? Now, I would very much like to be able to say that it was more than just the mere physical, but I don't want to lie to you. That's all it was. he wasn't looking for people, you know, like in Miss America contest who could sing and dance. And, you know, this is a woman who's going to be a nuclear physicist, you know, who, you know, also looks like XYZ. No. He wasn't. He just was interested in the pure physical.
He overlooked the talent competition.
Right. That wasn't his problem. Okay. So here we go. Pasuk Bet. And we're going to, again, Bet Gimel Dalet, we're going to make some space on here. Vayomru Na'arei HaMelech Mishartav. So the young people, the young men of the, or basically the Na'arei HaMelech, it would not be inappropriate to call it the king's boys. Right? In other words, the guys he hung out with. You got it. His bros. Okay? The king's bros, but they weren't really his, you know, physical bros, but they were his, you know, you can't even use a word like spiritual, but they were his buddies, okay? V'yomer, and his drinking guys. So V'yomer Na'arei HaMelech Mishartav, and the king's bros from his servants said to him, we've got a great idea. Yivakshu LaMelech Na'arot Betulot Tovot Mareh. You know what you should do, King? You should put out an executive order all through your 127 provinces that all of the Na'arot, Betulot, all of the totally, again, watch how I'm going to do this. I'm so proud of myself. All the completely, totally innocent young girls. Not too bad, right? Yeah, not too bad. Okay, who are exceptionally beautiful should wind up being gathered together so you can see them. That's Pasuk Gimel. V'yafked HaMelech pekidim b'chol medinot malchuto. And the king should issue edicts in all of the lands of his kingdom. V'yikmetzu et kol na'arei Betula, Tovat Mareh, and all of the totally, completely innocent, but, quote-unquote, drop-dead, gorgeous young women, should come where? El Shushan HaBira. They should come to Shushan, the capital. Now, where should they come? Should they just go walk up and down and go, hi, king? No. El Beit HaNashim. What was the Beit HaNashim? What's the common word?
The harem.
The harem. Okay, they're going to be inductees into the king's harem. So again, the talent contest, as you said so well, was not of the moment. Okay, El Beit HaNashim. Okay, and who should, who's in charge of that? Al Yad Hege Sarish HaMelech. Under the control of the head eunuch, okay, Hege, because you couldn't have somebody who was not a eunuch, okay, he was charged with being Shomer Hanashim. He made sure that no one other than the king would be able to establish deep and meaningful relationships with these women. Okay, that was, by the way, I was being a little bit wry in case you didn't get that. V'naton tamru kehen. And they would be put into sweet-smelling oils, perfume. Basically, think about this. The way you and I understand healthy, normal femininity with all the pluses, all the quote-unquote, all the minuses, and masculinity pluses and minuses. He didn't want any of that. What did he want? He wanted a 6th century BCE Barbie doll. So should she have anything that would make her really be a real authentic woman? No. For 6 months, she's going to be bathed in perfumes. And she's going to be with, you know, sweet-smelling, you know, herbs and so forth. In other words, the way you and I would say, that's not normal. But that's what he wanted. Okay? Now, Dalet. V'hana'ara asher, okay, titav be'enei ha'melech. And the na'ara, the young maiden who will find favor in the eyes of the king. Now, obviously, as you know from the rest of the Megillah, he didn't just look at them. He would invite them, a different one, every night until he found the one he was looking for. Okay? And that's really what he did, right? Asher tita
b'nei ha-melech. Did they have a choice?
No. No. So if you're going to say this is the equivalent to a monarchy-style rape, the short answer is yes, it was. They had no choice whatsoever. Well, they did. They could die, commit suicide.
And they were gathered by people? Like, they didn't come voluntarily to
no.
this?
No. Okay. Okay, and that's the truth. That's the only way to say it. So, and the one that was Teta Be'nei HaMelech, Timloch Tachat Vashti, she will then be in place of Vashti. Now, being the king, as we've said before, was shrewd, but certainly it would not have been a high scorer on the Stanford B'nai. What does it say next? Vayita Vadavar Be'nei HaMelech. The whole thing was great in the king's eyes. Okay, of course. Because all he's looking for is, in truth, he's not looking for a human being, he's just looking for an object. And therefore, v'ya'as Cain. And that's what he did. All right. Now that brings us to a very redeeming part. Mm-hmm. After we've gone through this, which is, to our modern sensitivities, terrible. I don't know another way to say it, right? Mm-hmm. We talk in our time and with our understanding of Judaism, we talk about life partners and soulmates and things like that. So this is, of course, completely antithetical to any of that. Okay? So now we're going to redeem what we've done so far, and we're going to bring onto the stage of history the great, unbelievable, amazing Mordechai. Okay? This is, by the way, one of the psukim that we recite after the Baal Kori. Ish Yehudi. Okay? There was a Jewish man, Haya b'Shushan Abira, who is in the capital of Shushan. Ushmo, and his name, was Mordechai ben Yair, the son of Yair, ben Shim'i, the son of Shimi, ben Kish, right, we're getting his genealogy, okay, the son of Kish, okay, Ish Yemini, and he was a Benjamite. So you'll notice, if you look on the sheet, the word Yehudi is in large font, and the word Yemini is in large font. So the question is, if he's a Yehudi, why do we see also called a Yemini? So does it mean that he's a Yehudi in the sense that he's from Shevet Yehuda? Or does it mean that he's Jewish, but he's from the tribe of Binyamin, of Benjamin? So we're going to look at that right now. So if you all, we're now in about the bottom third of the page. So we have Ish of the Makorot. So it says Ish Yehudi, Ayav, Shushan, etc. So this is straight Gemara. What we're going to see right now is going to be straight Gemara. It's Talmud Bavli, Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Bet, Amud Bet. Okay? And some of you may remember that we've been doing a number of sections from that particular page. All right, so what does it mean to say that he is Ish Yemini? And if you think that that's, too simple a question, the Gemara asks exactly that. My Ka'amar, right? So it's Aramaic for Manomar. What's being said here? Or Mane'emar. What's being said? When he's called Ish Yemini, what does that mean? Iliyachusa Ka'ate. So don't get worried, guys. It happens to be Aramaic. I'll translate it out for you. If it's talking about his Yichus, okay, Liyachse, let it be stated, V'azil ad Binyamin. And the only thing you should have here is to say that he's from Shevet Binyamin. Elamai shna hani. But what's being taught here? So Tana, it's been taught, Kulan al Shmo Nikra'u, that everybody was called after his name. Whose name? Yehuda. Once the destruction of Bayit Rishon took place, what do you wind up with? You wind up with an aruvia. An aruvia is like the word eruv. You have a mixture. The tribes are all mixed up. And certainly, those things that were differentiating factors, the litmus test of genealogy that would have been visible by outsiders, once we were in this miserable situation of being slaves, right, and being dragged to Babylon against our will, nobody knew what we were, who we were. They couldn't say, oh, that guy's from Shevet Shimon. Oh, I can see that he's one of the Levim. No, none of that. So we got this name called Yehudim, which is what we are, Ad Hayom Hazeh. We're all today Yehudim. So it happens to be that I happen to be from Shevet Levi, so I am a Levi. But that, right, and as all of you know, if you remember your Venn diagrams from the world of math, all Kohanim are Levim, but all Levim are not Kohanim. We only know about one tribe specifically, and that is a Shevet Levi, either Levim or Kohanim. But everybody else, we have no idea. And only Mashiach, Shiavo Aleinu B'Merav Yomeinu, will be able to tell us that. But at any rate, that's why he's called Ish Yehudi. Because, again, if he's Yehudi, why is he called Yemini? If he's Yemini, why is he called Yom? That's that question. All right, next. Why do we go through this whole genealogy? Ben Yair, Ben Shimi. So you might, Ben Kish. So you might say, what we're really doing is we're simply talking about his forebears. That would be the logical assumption, a very good logical assumption. The Gemara doesn't leave it at that. Look what the Gemara says. Ben Yair. Why was he called Ben Yair? Ben Shehi'ir Enehem Shel Yisrael B'Tefilato. Because he was such a person that he enlightened the eyes of the entire Jewish people with his tefillah. Because when the Gezerah of Haman is passed, all right, immediately what happens? First of all, as you all know, the whole city of Shushan is Navucha. Why? Because 2 days earlier, or 3 days earlier, everybody was drinking and having a great time. Okay, the Jews were no different than anybody else, which was, of course, one of the problematics of the whole story. But instead of giving up hope, what did Mordechai do? He was able to instill hope. Says the Gemara, he enlightened their eyes. He gave them hope where there had been no hope before. He brought light, vision, a possibility of a future. Okay? How did he do it? Through his tefilato. Through his tefillah. Okay, that's Ben Yair. Next, Ben Shimi. Okay, what does that mean? Ben Sheshama El Tefilato. So it wasn't that he just davened in a way that everybody was, in a sense, revivified on a spiritual level, but he was an individual whose tefillah was listened to. Okay? He was a tzaddik. He's a real tzaddik. And last but not least, Ben Kish, okay? What's that mean? So the Gemara turns it into a verb. What kind of individual was Mordechai? Mordechai was totally in Avraham Avinu's mold. Because, for example, if you remember when Avraham Avinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashem's going to destroy Sodom and Amorah, what does Avraham Avinu do?
Make a deal.
Right, let's talk this over. Okay, how about 50? How about 45? Okay, right? He's doing amazing things, trying to save these people. So what kind of person? So in other words, what would you and I call that in many ways? A never give up attitude. And he was willing, ready to bargain with Ribbono Shel Olam. Look at this one. Ben Kish. Shehat Kish, that he slammed, he banged with all of his strength, al sha'arei rachamim, on the gates of mercy. V'niftechu lo, and they were open because of Mordechai. Now, you guys all know that, you know, in my opinion, the major hero, for so many reasons that we're going to be discussing, of the whole story is, of course, Esther. Okay, for many reasons. But what we've been told by the Gemara here and the Midrash in the Gemara is that we have to remember that Mordechai was a powerhouse in and of himself. Okay? Let's continue. So, Pasuk Vav is that Pasuk that in the midst of all the joy, all the simcha, all the sason, all almost really, really like a what? Almost like a wedding, we're so happy. A wedding of one of our own children. Okay, you can never be happier than that. Okay, it's the only time you're in a chasna and you don't sit there and go, really? It's that long? Okay, because as far as you're concerned, when you're at your kid's chasna, it's not long enough. Okay, like this is, you just want slow motion to take over. It's so beautiful, you're so happy. So in the midst of all this simcha and this sason, okay, we suddenly hit this pasuk. Who was Mordechai? Asher, okay, haglah miYerushalayim. He was exiled from Jerusalem. And if you remember...
From Yerushalayim?
Yeah, from Yerushalayim. Okay, he... Okay, right now, the Baal Kori is using what nigun? Megillat Eicha. And all of a sudden, like only we can do this. You know what this reminds me of? Reminds me of Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal used to talk about how do we understand the idea of personal avelut versus the simcha of Klal Yisrael. So he says, the Torah demands that if a person, lo aleinu, is kover et meto, it buries, is dead, erev yontif, okay? So you, most of you know, your parent, once you bury and you sit aveilut for even 1 minute, that's it. There's no more Shiva. That's it. And all the cathartic aspects of Shiva, unfortunately, a person does not undergo. Okay? And what happens is, says Rav Soloveitchik, that evening, with the rest of Klal Yisrael, he has to be mesamech, as if what took place in the morning never took place. Because public simcha outweighs private misery. But here, in the midst of our public simcha, we have Megillat Eicha being recited, right, in the midst of the Megillah. So Asher Haglam Yerushalayim, he was exiled from Yerushalayim, Im Hagola, with the whole exiled individuals, Asher, let me see one sec, Asher Haglata, who were exiled, Im Yechaniah Melech Yehuda, with Yechaniah Melech Yehuda. Okay, so in other words, right smack in the middle, Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, and everybody is taken to Bavel. So Hegla, and Asher Hegla, who did this? Nebuchadnezzar. Now Nebuchadnezzar was the grandfather of who?
Vashti.
Your friend and mine, Vashti. Asher Hegla Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. Right? And Nebuchadnezzar had done all of this. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, last pasuk for the evening, Zion. This is an unbelievable pasuk. This pasuk, seriously, you could talk about for 2-3 hours, but I'm going to try to do it in 5 minutes. Okay? I'll do my very best. Vayhi omein et Hadassah. So Mordechai raised Hadassah. Okay? Excuse me? Who's Hadassah? Says the Megillah. He asked there.
The hidden one.
Right. Don't get confused. We don't call it Megillat Hadassah. Mm-hmm. Right? We do call it Megillat Esther. Okay? So, Hadassah is Esther. Bat Dodo, his niece. Because remember, okay, Mordechai and Esther are uncle and niece. Ki ein la, ave ein. Because obviously in all the turmoil and all the deaths and destruction that took place in Yerushalayim, her mother and father were no more. Okay? Now, Vahana'ara, and the girl, okay, Yifat Toar, was, again, just to be very rabbinic, very beautiful. Okay? Nara Yifat Toar, V'tovat Mar'eh, and she was comely to look upon. Okay? I need some points here, guys. I mean, I really need some points, because I'm holding myself back so that nobody could be offended. Okay? Now, Uvamod Aviha, and when her father, Vima, and her mother died, Lekacha, Mordechai lo, Labat, which means literally, Mordechai took her to be as it were his own daughter. Okay, we're going to see that, to quote Ira Gershwin, right, it ain't necessarily so. It's not that way, right? Like in Porgy and Bess, it's not that way at all. We're going to see, really, the Chazal say that Esther was not his daughter, but rather what?
His
wife.
His wife.
Okay? And that's why, by the way, later on, when she goes willingly to Achashverosh, what are the famous words that she says? Kaasher avadati avadati. Okay, now what's that all about? If I will be destroyed, I will be destroyed. Because here's the halacha. They already were husband and wife, according to Chazal. Mordechai and Esther were already husband and wife. However, when a woman is forced to undergo relations against her will. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Dalid, says that Esther Karka Olam. She was just like a piece of ground. Okay, she wasn't a participatory person to this act, and so on and so forth. So basically, when she's being raped, that's without any will on her part, and therefore she was not proscribed to Mordechai if that situation would have ceased. But once she voluntarily went to Achashverosh to save the greater good, then at that, and of course, when you went to Achashverosh, you didn't sit there and discuss politics and existentialism. Okay? She was going willingly to him at that point, Kasher Avadati Avadati. I can no longer be your wife. I will become proscribed to you. Okay? Now, by the way, she's described here as Tovat Mareh. So, who else in all of Tanakh is described as Tovat Mareh? So, there's only two other people. Rivka and Batsheva. How about that? There's three in all of Tanakh. Okay, there's Rivka, Batsheva, and Esther. Which I think, I can say this without offending anyone's sensibilities, would mean that these women were possess singular beauty. I think that would be a reasonable way to say that. Okay? All right. It's almost 9 o'clock, so rather than racing through this final Gemara, which deals with the questions of what does it mean when it says that he took her for his daughter, and was her name Esther or was her name Hadassah? Let's not rush through it, and I'll leave you hopefully wanting a little bit more for next week. And next week we're going to deal with that, and God willing, we'll continue in the second parak. Okay.
Two things.